two, three, four.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
Never been done before.
We're talking about a subject.
To bring you to the light.
Farewell to you, people.
What's up, folks? You're tuned to Hard Knock here on the Pacifica Network. Up next on the program, reporter Georgia Fort remembers Tulsa, Oklahoma on the 100th year commemoration of the Tulsa Massacre. Stay tuned.
I'm in Tulsa, Oklahoma for the 100 year commemoration of the Tulsa Massacre. What was known as Black Wall Street was bombed on Memorial Day in 1921, dissipating 35 blocks of black wealth. Many in this area say that Tulsa has never fully recovered from what happened 100 years ago.
I will be done with the troubles of the world.
100 years seems like a lot of time, but descendants of Black Wall Street say their wounds still aren't healed.
But we have seen the pictures of the smoking ruins of Greenwood. We know what Tulsa looked like at the end of May. Every effort to build again was stymied by institutional racism that twisted the language of insurance to make sure that restitution never arrived.
While Reverend Jesse Jackson shared a message of hope for rebuilding.
A new Wall Street.
A new Wall Street.
A new Greenwood Avenue.
A new Tulsa.
A new Tulsa.
New Oklahoma.
A new
America.
Hundreds of businesses destroyed. Millions in wealth gone. The inheritance of future generations up in flames.
Only the victims,
only the victims.
The power to forgive, power to redeem, hunger and suffering,
redemptive.
Redemptive. For the power to forgive and redeem.
In Tulsa, Oklahoma, I'm Georgia Fort.
Nah, they don't really know about Black Wall Street. Wall Street, Wall Street, Wall Street. Nah, they don't really know about Black Wall Street. Wall Street, Wall Street, Wall Street. Nah, they don't really know about Black Wall Street. They ain't teach us about the truth in school, they kept us all asleep. It's a whole lot of secrets buried under the concrete. Make America great again, when was it great? Remind me. Nah, they don't really know about Black Wall Street, where black businesses were steady growing like a tall tree. Bus lines, hotels, and planes, we had all three. They make it seem like we contributed nothing at all, G. Nah, they don't really know about Black Wall Street. They ain't teach us about the truth in school, they kept us all asleep. It's a whole lot of secrets buried under the concrete. Make America great again, when was it great? Remind me. Nah, they don't really know about Black Wall Street, where black businesses were steady growing like a tall tree. Bus lines, hotels, and planes, we had all three. They make it seem like we contributed nothing at all, G. Simon Perry was a businessman without a game. Owned the hotel, the Tulsa Transit, and the charter plane. Provided transportation when you needed to avoid the rain. Believed in opportunity, he knew that there was more to gain. See Andrew Jackson if you ever got shot. And it's ironic, in the massacre, he died from getting shot. One of the top black surgeons, believe it or not. A true leader in innovation, he was achieving a lot. And then you had the William family, they the ones that owned the Dream Theater. Provided you a quick escape so you could dream bigger. It started out as a mechanic's garage. Couldn't have known it would burn down when the panic arrived. Charlie Wilson had the vision where the darkness could shine. The Gap Band stood for Greenwood, Archer, and Pine. They had that number one hit, that dropping the bomb. Gotta read in between the lines, cause it was truth in that rhyme. Nah, they don't really know about Black Wall Street. They ain't teach us about the truth in school, they kept us all asleep. It's a whole lot of secrets buried under the concrete.
I'm the daughter of Lucinda Ellis and John Wesley Ford of Tulsa, Oklahoma. I'm the sister of Hughes Van Ellis, who is also here today. I'm a survivor of the Tulsa Race Massacre. 2 weeks ago, I celebrated my 107th birthday. Today, I'm visiting Washington, D.C. for the first time in my life. I'm here seeking justice, and I'm asking my country to acknowledge what happened in Tulsa in 1921. On May 31st in 21, I went to bed at my family's home in Greenwood. neighbors of Tulsa, the neighborhood I felt asleep in that night, was rich, not just in terms of wealth, but in culture, community, heritage, and my family had a beautiful home. We had great neighbors, and I had friends to play with. I felt safe. I had everything a child could need. I had a bright future ahead of me. Greenwood should have given me the chance to truly make it in this country. Within a few hours, all of that was gone. The night of the massacre, I was awakened by my family. My parents and 5 siblings were there. I was told we had to leave, and that was it. I will never forget the violence of the white mob when we left our home. I still see black men seen being shot, black bodies lying in the street. I still smell smoke and see fire. I still see black businesses being burned. I still hear airplanes flying overhead. I hear the screams. I have lived through the massacre every day. Our country may forget this history, but I cannot. I will not. And other survivors do not, and our descendants do not. When my family was forced to leave Tulsa, I lost my chance of an education. I never finished school past the 4th grade. I have never made much money in my country. State and city took a lot from me. Despite this, I spent time supporting the war effort in the shipyards of California. But most of my life, I was a domestic worker serving white families. I never made much money, but to this day, I can barely afford my everyday needs. All the while, the city of this Tulsa have unjustly used the names and stories of victims like me to enrich myself and its white allies through the 30s, million raised by the Tulsa Centennial Commissioner while I was continued to live in poverty. I am 107 year old and have never been seen justice. I pray that one day I will. I have been blessed with a long life and have seen the best and the worst of this country. I think about the terror, horror inflicted upon black people in this country every day. This subcontinued MIDI has the power to lead us down a better path. I'm asking that my country acknowledge what has been happened to me, the tremors and the pain, the loss, and I ask the survivors and descendants to be given the chance to seek justice, open the door. All of you know how easy it is to deny that a violent mob threatened your lives and took your property. For 70 years, the city of Tulsa and its stream of tremors told us that the massacre didn't happen, like we didn't see it with our own eyes. You have me here right now. You see Mother Randall, you see my brother, Hughes Van Ellis. We live this history and we can't ignore it. It's our lives with us. Oh my goodness. We lost everything that day, our homes, our churches, our newspapers, our theaters, our lives. Greenwood represented all the best of what was possible for black people in America and for all the people. No one cared about us for almost 100 years. We and our history have been forgotten, washed away. This Congress must recognize us and our history. For black America, for the white Americans, and for all Americans, that's some justice. You black, I'm black, I'm black.
childhood was hard, and we didn't have much. We were what little we had would be stolen from us, just like it was stolen in Tulsa. You may have been taught that when something is stolen from you, you can go to the courts to be made whole. You can go to the courts to get justice. This wasn't the case for us. We were made to feel that our struggle was unworthy of justice, that we were less valued than whites, that we weren't fully Americans. We were shown that in the United States, not all men were equal under law. We were shown that when black voices called out for justice, no one cared. I did my duty in World War II. I served in combat in the Far East with the 234 AAA Gun Battalion. We were all black battalion. I fought for freedom aboard, even though it was ripped away from me at home. Even after my home and my community were destroyed. It's because I believe in the end, America would get its right. When I returned home from the war, I didn't find any of this freedom. I was fighting for overseas. Unlike white servicemen, I wasn't entitled to GI Bill benefits because of the color of my skin. I came home to segregation, a separate and unequal America, but still I believed in America. The Tulsa Race Massacre is a footnote in the history books for us. We live with it every day, and the thought of what Greenwood was and what it could have been. We aren't just black and white pictures on a screen. We are flesh and blood. I was there when it happened. I'm still here.
That's right.
My sister was there with them. She's still here. We are not asking for a handout. All we are asking for is for a chance to be treated like a first-class citizen. Who truly in the pictures of the promise that this is a land where there is liberty and justice for all.
I am blessed and honored to be here speaking with you today. It means a lot to me to finally be able to look at you all in the eye and ask you to do the right thing. I have waited so long for justice. My name is Leslie Evelyn Benningfield Randall. People call me Mother Randall. Today I'm 106 years old. 100 years ago, in 1921, I was a six-year-old child. I was blessed to live with my grandmother in a beautiful black community in Tulsa, Oklahoma, called Greenwood. I was lucky. I had a home, and I had toys. I didn't have any fear. I was a young child, and I felt very safe. Thank you. My community was beautiful and was filled with happy and successful Black people. Then everything changed. It was like a war. White men with guns came and destroyed my community. We couldn't understand why. What did we do to them? We didn't understand. We were just living. But they came and they destroyed everything. They burned houses and businesses. They just took what they wanted and out of the building. Then they burned the building, burned them. They murdered people. We were told they just dumped the dead bodies into the river. I remember running outside of our house. I just passed dead bodies. It wasn't a pretty sight. I still see it today in my mind, 100 years later. I was so scared. I didn't think we could make it out to alive. I remember people were running everywhere. We waited for the soldiers to come. And when they finally came, they took us to the fairground where we would be safe. It felt like so long before they came. Thank you. Let's see. I survived a 1921 Tulsa race massacre, and I have survived 100 years of painful memories and losses. By the grace of God, I am still here. I have survived. I have survived to tell this story. I believe that I am still here to share it with you. Hopefully, now you all will listen to us while we are still here. Some more? Mm-hmm. The white people who did this to us were filled with so much hate. It is disgusting that they hate us so, that they hate us for no reason except that we are Black people. We know most of the people who committed these acts and died are dead now. The three of us here today are the only ones left that we know of. But just because these men are probably dead, the city and county of Tulsa, the state of Oklahoma, and the Tulsa Chamber are still responsible for making it right, because it was they who caused the massacre, and it's continued. The chamber helped ensure that we could not rebuild after the massacre, including holding us in internment camps. They owe us something. They owe me something. I have lived much of my life poor by opportunities my opportunities were taken from me and my community, North Tulsa. Black Tulsa is still messed up today. They didn't rebuild it. They sure did. It's empty. It's a ghetto. They have raised more than $30 million and have refused to share any with me or the other two survivors. They have used my name to further their fundraising goals without my permission. Now that's a crime and misrepresenting my support of their upcoming events focused on making Tulsa look good and not justice. You can help us get some justice. America is still full of examples where people in positions of power, many just like you, have told us to wait. Others have told us it's too late. It seems like justice in America is always so slow or not possible for Black people. And we are made to feel crazy just for asking for things to be made right. There are always so many excuses for why justice is so slow or never happened at all. I am here today, 106 years old, looking at you all in the eye. We've waited 100 years. We have waited too long, and I am tired. We are tired. And lastly, I am asking you today to give us some peace. For some peace, please give me, my family, and my community some justice. Thank you.
Nah, they don't really know about Black Wall Street. They ain't teach us about the truth in school, they kept us all asleep. It's a whole lot of secrets buried under the concrete. Make America great again, when was it great? Remind me. Nah, they don't really know about Black Wall Street, where black businesses were steady growing like a tall tree. Bus lines, hotels, and planes, we had all three. They make it seem like we contributed nothing at all. The only thing they really ever taught us was to be a slavery. Implemented the Willie Lynch curriculum, it never changed. Systematic racism had us going in separate lanes. Divide and conquer, that's a tactic for political gain. May 31st, 1921, the Tulsa race riot really was a massacre to keep the black race quiet. Truth be told, I'll expose all the secrets they hiding. Without having knowledge of self is how to keep us divided. We need unity, the youth need guidance and opportunity. Go learn something new and bring it back to your community. I truthfully can't let the time foolery influence me. Planted a seed of knowledge in my mind, that's when I grew a tree. They burned us to the ground, but like a phoenix we rose. Tulsa, Oklahoma showed me what it mean to be home. First city attacked by terrorists, but it don't seem to be known. They say the truth will set you free, but first it need to be told. Nah, they don't really know about Black Wall Street. They ain't teach us about the truth in school, they kept us all asleep. It's a whole lot of secrets buried under the concrete. Make America great again, when was it great? Remind me. Nah, they don't really know about Black Wall Street, where black businesses were steady growing like a tall tree. Bus lines, hotels, and planes, we had all three. They make it seem like we contributed nothing at all, G.
David D. Hard Knock Radio hanging out with you this afternoon. The other day I was talking about information and the dissemination of it being a fault line. And I also talked about the fact that when it comes to history, and in particular, history of black people and indigenous people, That's a major, major fault line. Somebody who's been traversing that fault line and hitting back and making things happen is a good friend of the show. Her name on stage, we call her Dr. Goddess, but she is a full-fledged professor and historian and somebody who's been doing the damn thing, Dr. Kimberly Ellis. Welcome to the show. I wanted to talk to you for a couple of reasons. One, congratulations on the work you've been doing around Tulsa and the Tulsa Massacre of 1921. There's, of course, the 100-year anniversary. But I wanted to have you come on because, you know, we just recently saw testimony up in the Hill around three of the survivors of that massacre speaking out. But as we're seeing that there's a fervent pitch to put laws into place to prevent people from not only talking about things like Tulsa, but about the institution of slavery and related issues that bring up the subject of race. So we know that Tennessee, their governor just signed a bill saying that you can't really talk about critical race theory and you can't talk about all these systemic issues of oppression in the schools. We just saw the sister who spearheaded the 1619 Project that got so much acclaim internationally from the New York Times. She was denied tenure after reactionary forces said, hey, this is too disturbing. And we know that they, I think they just put a law, you can tell us, that at least they're going to allow people to kind of understand and learn what was going on around the Tulsa Massacre. So I wanted to bring you on to get your perspective on this because this is your terrain and you're in the middle of it and really understand how these fights are unfolding. So welcome to the show and how are you doing?
Thank you so much, Davey. I'm doing well, and I have been definitely continuing to educate people and also keeping up with the politics, right? Because you're absolutely right. So let me make the announcement first that Tulsa Burning, the documentary that was created by Russell Westbrook and Stanley Nelson, in which I am one of the featured historians, is coming on Sunday, May 30th at 8 p.m. on the History Channel. And also, please do check the History Channel online. There are teaching materials that are available. I'm also going to be doing a how to teach about Tulsa.
And let me just make sure what people are clear. Stanley Nelson has done a number of documentaries, including the one on the Black Panthers. And Russell Westbrook is the basketball player who played for a number of years in Oklahoma City. And this is one of his many contributions to that city.
Yep. And he was just in the news because a fan dumped popcorn over his head, apparently. And yeah. She was yesterday or something like that.
Yeah.
Or so, you know, it's appalling. But in any event, please do watch the documentary. I think that Marco Williams and all of us who contributed did a really good job, and telling the story is important, and actually bringing it up to today's history is important. I was a part of the first reparations team to try to get reparations for the then 300 survivors that were still alive. And I worked with Charles Ogletree, Johnny Cochran, Randall Robinson, Dennis Sweet, Michelle Roberts, Ajua Ayatoro, you know, a number of different people that we were called like the Dream Team. And, you know, basically we started in Oklahoma. The state of Oklahoma denied the petition, which means that you ramp it up and go from the state to the actual federal level to the Supreme Court. And we arrived at the door of the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court under the then Bush administration denied even hearing the case because they said it was outside of the statute of limitations. And our legal argument was that it was not outside of the statute of limitations because the Tulsa Race Riot Commission had just been created years before and had issued their report. And so with the report is what came, you know, in terms of the actual new facts and the actual facts that came out. And so it's basically America, you know, not being accountable, and the American government sidestepping the actual history. And this is also happening in a new way today. So even in terms of the actual history of Tulsa, I mean, at this point, most people know that on May 31st and June 1st of 1921, the community of Greenwood is what was called the residential and business community, was burned to the ground, and people, you know, were shot and died. But also it's really important to know that our community also fought back valiantly, but we were, you know, always outnumbered, always outgunned, right, as Walter Mosley tells us. But
let me just ask you this, just so I know that story, because we've heard you talk about it and really give some details. Can you just give maybe a brief 101 for people who are going, what Tulsa, what are you talking about? Just so they know.
Yeah. So it was literally May 31st and June 1st of 1921. Tulsa, the Greenwood residential and business community, was a largely affluential community. It had, you know, one of the first and biggest, you know, Black owned hotels. They're owned by John B. Stratford. There were a number of different people. They had their Black newspapers. They had a hospital. They had bus service, skating rinks. And largely because of it was still Jim Crow, the dollar circulated within his community. And I think that one of the things that I want to keep for everybody to keep in mind is that there's a couple myths around Tulsa that should be dispelled. One, not everybody in Tulsa was rich. And two, one of the reasons why the money circulated so well was not just because of Jim Crow, but also because you had Black people who were domestics of the rich whites, you know, across town, because Tulsa was a boom town and oil was discovered in Indian territory before Oklahoma became a state. Mm. And so that is, all of that history is very important, and you will see it in the documentary. But at the end of the day, there was a teenage boy who was falsely accused of attacking a white girl in an elevator, and there were a group of armed Black men who went down to the courthouse to prevent him from being lynched, which is something they had a pattern of doing, because literally there were not enough police out there in the Wild Wild West. And many of them were armed, as Ida B. Wells instructed us to do. And they defended the law. You know, they were just going to let him go through the legal process. But there were whites that were surrounding, thousands that were surrounding the courthouse and demanding that he be released and lynched. And so they went down to protect him. And there was a scuffle between two people, one, you know, a white man who didn't feel that a Black man should, you know, be armed. And they fought, they struggled over the gun, and it went off. And that started the chaos. And basically the men had to, the armed African-American men then retreated to Greenwood. They lined themselves across the Frisco railroad tracks. They put, you know, they were up in the AME church. They were, you know, up in their own offices, and they were defending their community from this new onslaught of white special deputies that had been deputized by the Tulsa Police Department.
Right. And I remember, not to cut you off, this was crucial because it's one of the aspects of that story we never heard. And yes, it came to fruition during the last year, during the George Floyd.
Absolutely.
Where what you explained was that there was this tactic that were used by white supremacist deputies and police to deputize, you know, racist citizens and give them the power of the law to come after Black folks. And we started to see that being used during the George Floyd uprisings. And that was a key component that, you know, it's kind of been erased under the thing, but you saw that where you're at in Pittsburgh.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah, I mean, the special deputies are really important, you know, deputizing ordinary citizens, you know, is a major catastrophe waiting to happen if you ever do it. And it's literally the reason why Tulsa was destroyed. I mean, the special deputies did most of the damage. You know, they felt like they were above the law. And we saw it on January 6th, right? And now, you know, we're seeing a total revision of the history. So let me read to you, you know, what was just in NBC News this morning, which is that Republican Governor Kevin Stitt this month signed a law that bars teaching concepts or courses that will cause people to, quote, feel discomfort, guilt, anguish, or any other form of psychological distress, unquote, because of their race or gender. It also bans promoting concepts such as that anyone, quote, by virtue of his or her race or sex is inherently racist, sexist, or oppressive, whether consciously or unconsciously. He said, now more than ever, we need policies that bring us together, not rip us apart. As governor, I firmly believe that not one cent of taxpayer money should be used to define and divide young Oklahomans about their race or sex. This is what this bill upholds for public education. So this is appalling because it is, as we are approaching the centennial of the Tulsa massacre, that when schools have, they want to teach about it, they want people to know about it. And now the Republican governor has passed this law that is even illegal to teach about it. So, you know, the Republicans, I just want everybody to be so very clear that they are trying to deny that the January 6th Capitol insurrection even happened. And if they acknowledge that it happened, they're trying to downplay what happened. And if they are not trying to downplay what happened, they're trying to outright deny what happened and its significance. The Republicans are passing voter suppression laws all across the country, and especially in Georgia, where we, you know, as any voter put in, you know, Ralph Warnock and John Ossoff and made the Senate equal. The Republicans are in a huge revisionist history, revisionist status, and a repressive status. We have to fight against this with every fiber of our being. What they're trying to do is lay way for Trump to return or someone Trump-like to take the stage. And they want to depress, literally depress us spiritually, educationally, historically, so that this can happen. And I mean, you know, there's so much to teach, but this is a problem. Everybody needs to be very, very aware that the war is actually now. It's even worse now than it is, you know, before the insurrection. The insurrection was that lightning match. You know what I mean? It was the lightning rod to let us know what was coming. It you know, it's not the end. It was the beginning.
Dr. Ellis, Kimberly Ellis is our guest. You just read off the bill that is now law in Oklahoma, signed by the governor Stitt, I believe is his name.
Stitt.
Kevin Stitt. So as he signed this bill into law in Oklahoma, in Tennessee on Monday, Governor Bill Lee signed into law that his state will not allow in any school to teach an individual by virtue of race or sex issues around privilege, racism, sexism, or oppressive or oppression, whether consciously or subconsciously. This is the law that they put in Tennessee. This is on top of the laws in Texas that have removed slavery and conversations about that. And so one by one, you're starting to see these fault lines. This, and you know, I know you've been talking a lot about the Republicans, but we also have to remember, even here in California, having at least in the elementary level, the ethnic studies bill was vetoed because it included conversations around Palestinians. So, you know, it's a fault line. And I think what we're looking at, the egregiousness of these other bills, which goes into a long line of sanitizing slavery, erasing it, and moving us in a direction, because the language of this bill is like, it's against the law to make me feel uncomfortable about having conversations around race. That to me is absolutely insidious. And, you know, it opens the door for a whole lot of gaslighting that you can't even define as gaslighting. Do you also connect this to the bill that Tom Cotton wants to sign to deny the teaching of the 1619 Project and the denial of tenure from the sister that spearheaded that project?
Absolutely. It's all related, without question. This battle over 1619 versus 1776 is all over the grand mythology that some white Americans who are committed to the idea of white supremacy, they want to create a mythology about themselves, that America was created as a wholesome nation, just built upon the ideas of freedom and justice and liberty for all. And the actual historical documents tell us otherwise. Thomas Jefferson's original draft of the Declaration of Independence tells us otherwise. The Constitutional Convention tells us otherwise. The relationship to Britain and slavery and all of the laws, it tells us otherwise. And so we start with 1619 because literally it is because of slavery that America could even afford to break off from Britain, to even do battle over taxes, right? It's not just the Tea Party. You know, literally, it definitely is not just the Tea Party. It was also over slavery. So there's so much. There's so much. This is all. This is what I'm saying, that this is a fierce battle. This is not just an academic battle. And I need for everybody to know that this is the coldest war we've had. And if we don't win this cold war, we can assure ourselves we will be in a real hot war for sure.
With the documentary that you all did, were there hurdles in terms of being able to include information? Did you find, and do you anticipate people moving forward, if they do these things independently, finding themselves being censored and what have you? One of the reason why I ask this is Eton Thomas, the basketball player for the Wizards, who does a radio show here with Dave Zirin, posted up a meme the other day, and it showed a picture of Hitler and it showed a picture of King Leopold. And it talked about, you know, the devastation that both men inflicted on various populations. Hitler, of course, we associate with the Holocaust, and King Leopold, you know, raped and pillaged and killed millions of Africans. And he talked, and in the meme, it said, one of these is not taught in school. Why is that? And it was banned. You know, he got like a little notice, talked about it violated the community concerns on social media, et cetera, et cetera. And I thought that was interesting because what was banned, but what was allowed was a young kid holding a pistol and pointing it at, you know, at somebody with threatening remarks. That was allowed to circulate here all up on social media without being stopped at all. It didn't violate any sort of, you know, community concerns. And you can see that now. Type in Deep East Oakland, you see a young kid holding up a gun, right? And, you know, that was perfectly all right. As we see, you know, this conversation about gun violence skyrocketing. So even in places that you figure that you would have full, you know, access to express yourself, you're seeing that it's being politicized on that one. So if we're destructive, sure, we'll let it go. But if you educate, then it's in violation. And so the work that you're doing, are you finding yourself having to deal with those hurdles, both in academia and even when you're doing projects like this documentary?
Well, no, because the documentary was occurring, you know, before all of this started. And the producers told me that, you know, they actually have an overwhelming number of primary sources and history and things like that. So I think that in terms of this documentary, I think our saddest realization is just that so many of the survivors have passed away. So that, you know, when an elder dies, you know, we lose a library. So there's that. But no, I think, you know, that I think that the documentary will tell a very full story. And the problem will be, you know, will teachers even be able to play it in their classrooms? You know,
yeah, that's what I was going to ask. You're going to have this documentary, but can we teach it?
No, like that in Oklahoma, no. According to the law takes effect July 1st. So this is the battle, you know, over this information that, like, you know, I'm an Africana Studies and American Studies major. I was at that in undergrad, and I still teach Africana Studies. I still teach American Studies. I still teach about August Wilson dramas, and it's all about race and Reconstruction and slavery, and I mean the whole nine. So technically I couldn't even teach anything about August Wilson in Oklahoma or in these states that are passing these laws. It's ridiculous.
How close are we to having this become federal law, considering that one of the last things that Donald Trump did when he was president was put an executive order denying funds if anybody was teaching critical race theory? I'm not sure if Joe Biden has reversed that, but, you know, did he reverse it yet?
He did. It's a beautiful thing. You know, that's the thing about executive orders, Davey D. And this is what I've been having conversations about, you know, across the board, because executive orders, they, you know, they seem so big and bad. They're dictatorial. You know what I mean? And it's just like the president can say, I don't want that, or I do want this. And then they create an executive order. But the problem with executive orders is that when the next president comes, all he has to do is create another executive order and can reverse your policies. So thankfully, Joe Biden easily, first day, you know, he eliminated that 1776 commission. You know what I mean? He stood by the 1619 project, and he eliminated that the executive order that Donald Trump signed, you know, banning critical race theory. And that is why the governors, right, the Republican governors have picked this up, and they've picked up this the Trump campaign, you know, to rewrite or revise American history, or to continue to repress, you know, Africana studies, for example, in their various states. So it does seem very partisan, but I hear what you're saying, that, you know, we have to watch out across the board. But I would say that we'll see more of this on the Republican side. And here's the thing. Let me put in here H.R. 40, right? H.R. 40 finally got out of the Judiciary Committee, and it left the Judiciary Committee with 25 yes and 17 no. All 17 Republicans, including Black Republican Burgess Owens.
So this is, of course, the reparations bill. Let me ask you this.
And I'm sorry, let me add to that, because it's really important for everybody to know that Representative Jeffries included Tulsa. He made like a special, I guess, amendment to the bill to make sure that Tulsa was included in H.R. 40. And I think it's largely because H.R. 40 is created to both study and provide policy recommendations, you know, for reparations. So, you know, he just wanted to make sure that Tulsa was not excluded, even though we do have a lot more information about Tulsa than in other places.
I know, Dr. Ellis, our time is short. What do you want our listeners to do moving forward to protect the flow of information? We know that we have these laws that are being signed, so that's one battle. We're probably going to do a show in the next couple of weeks of what I would call algorithm apartheid, where certain types of topics get to flow via social media, yep. And other topics don't. And that's a whole thing, and that's privatized. So that becomes a battle. And I use the example of Etan Thomas, the basketball player, being banned for his photo of King Leopold and Hitler, and, you know, and juxtaposing that with a young kid holding a gun and making threats. So how do we start to deal with that? What would you ask people that are listening to do to make sure that we start to be aware and to protect these type of incursions that are coming where, you know, we may look up one day and find it's against the law to even have political conversations.
Yeah, I mean, we have to, honestly, that it's not far-fetched. That's why we have to fight back right now. Do not acquiesce. Do not go, you know, do not go gently into that dark night. We need to be very, very aware because these laws, like, you know, they're just popping up, right? They're not, I mean, and they're getting attention. But I just think that we could easily be in these streets or be in these schools. Like, we need to be, teaching this information anyway, honestly. And if that means Saturday school, you know, to stay out of jail, or if that means that we're constantly spreading even more information online, that we dig into the 1619 Project and spread it even further, right, online, because these laws are not, they're not going to stand up to the Supreme Court. You know, I'm sure that that's hopeful, but freedom of speech is important. So these laws are not going to stand. What is happening is that this is politics. They know that it's going to take time for people to fight these laws and to get them reversed. And in that time, they will sneak in a new Republican challenger. They will slip Donald Trump right back in as though he didn't do what he did. And as though this was just a mistake because of the global pandemic and, you know, he's been misinterpreted, blah, blah, blah. So we have to fight back, peep the game, and continue to teach online, because I will definitely be doing that. I was already doing it, but I'll continue teach online and fight the power, period. Like, do not accept this.
Dr. Kimberly Ellis, we appreciate you taking time out. We will look for the documentary, Tulsa Burning. You know, I think you say riots, and riot implies that everybody was kind of even Steven on here. And that's not what was the case, you know, and
it wasn't. And in the past, I've always said Tulsa race riot, war, and massacre, only because the riot part seemed to start at the courthouse where there was just sort of like people scrambling, right? And then the war part happened, you know, later on that evening with them trying to defend Greenwood. And then the massacre part happened later on that morning with whites having further organized and gathered and were outnumbering the people. And then it was an all out massacre with the planes and so, and, you know, just burning things down and shooting people at random. So all three of those things happened, but it does ultimately add up to the Tulsa massacre. I just always want people to know that we did, you know, make an attempt to defend our community, and that should be honored as well.
Real talk.
But it wasn't after. It just was.
Dr. Kimberly Ellis, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you. And find me, Davey and the audience, at drkimberlyellis.com. And also, I made an article on dictionary.com. So if you look up Black Wall Street, you know, or Tulsa, you'll find my article there as well. So spread the word.
No doubt. And we're going to have you back soon. We much appreciate the work that you do. And I want to thank you for hanging with us this afternoon.
Hard Knock Radio. We're rocking with Picasso.
What?
And Maya,
who?
My last name is Susana. Yeah, yeah, yeah.